State Affairs Committee meeting will come to order. I'll temporarily be chairing the meeting until Representative Covina gets here. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. It's 8:40. We have with us Representative Baker, Representative Miller, Representative Zuckerberg, and Representative Choquette. Today's meeting will take up HDR 29 relating to Persian Gulf conflict, HB 188 relating to citations, medals for Persian Gulf vets, HD 171 relating to prohibited sealing of certain court records, and HDR 17 relating to task force and government roles. First, this morning, I'd like to start with HB 188. John, is Richard here? Are we willing to be here?
My name is John Welch, and I'm the staff for Representative Foster. Richard is attempting to come over, so we may be seeing him. It depends on how long it takes. He knows of the meeting, and is making an attempt to get here.
Okay, if you would proceed with your testimony.
Okay, this bill is before you. It's gone through Military Veterans Affairs. It's an attempt at honoring, with a commemoration from the state of Alaska, two Alaska residents that served in the Persian conflict. And we feel that it's appropriate that we give them a medallion of some sort, a medal medallion, that would be a long-lasting memory for them and their families of their efforts and participation in the Gulf conflict.
Representative Foster, please join us. You want to try out your ventriloquism act, or?
We'll continue. That's all right.
That's all I have at this point. I think that's pretty much self-explanatory. Other than that, we are working with the Department of Military Veterans Affairs on obtaining a listing of the eligible participants, and there are a couple of scenarios we have in the bill that we would use voting lists and other reliable indicators, including the military records that could be provided to the department from the different branches that had enlisted officers or enlisted soldiers in the conflict. There are other bills, for instance, Senate Bill 152 of Senator Helfert's, which includes a $500 a bonus to military personnel in the Gulf conflict. If that piece of legislation passes, it has a we also need to establish a list of eligible applicants or participants, and they propose to use a permanent fund dividend application. If it passes, we could use that same list that they would gather. If it doesn't pass, if this is the only piece of legislation that requires a listing of eligible participants for the Gulf conflict, we'd go back to the department's proposal and using advertisement and direct cooperation with the military branches.
John, did you say in the beginning that you were working with the Department of Defense to
Military Veterans Affairs?
Military Veterans Affairs to get the list.
Yes.
But when it comes time for a measure I have before the committee, it too is related tangentially in that attempts to send a message.
Okay.
To, troops who
the same participants then.
Not exactly, but
okay.
More or less.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Why is it so hard, and why does it cost $22,000 to find out the number of Alaskans that went to the Persian Gulf? I find this that the record should be easily obtainable from the different branches of the service.
It's a good question, and it was one that you'd think they would have it prepared by, just go to General McNary or one of the higher ups in the department and say who served and who was the last resident of those serving. And I guess it's not that simple. In fact, we have both the ones that replaced active servicemen in other areas, so they left the state and possibly went to an assignment in Japan or Hawaii or another United States, another one of the United States, or in replacement of a serviceman. So, and then we also have those that served in the fringe areas, Turkey or some of the bases in the vicinity of the conflict. We would include those people in the fringe area in this in this bill. But I don't think they kept records with Alaska residency in mind, and I think that's where the problem lies, is that they certainly know they're dispatched from Alaska, but whether they're Alaska residents or not, I think it's similar to what we're finding in the reapportionment situation where they don't have it listed out whether they're in fact Alaska residents or not.
John?
And I prefer that some of this, if Jeff Morrison could answer, because I know he did investigate this thoroughly from for the fiscal note purposes, so.
Well, I would defer to Mr. Morrison because I have some questions on the fiscal note.
Okay.
John, I assume then you've also tried to work with congressional offices and found out some of these facts.
No, I have not gotten in touch with the congressional offices.
Most likely they've run into the same answer, it's not kept track by residency.
Yeah, I don't know why, I'm not sure why they would be involved, I'm not sure on that.
One quick question for the sponsor. Was it your intention to include people that are currently serving in the bases in Alaska that might have a hometown listed as another area, along with Alaskans that have hometowns listed as Alaska or within Alaska that might currently be serving in Fort Ord or in some places outside Alaska? It seems to me there's a distinction there. I know some of my friends spent a lot of time in bases outside of Alaska. They automatically became residents of those areas, much like Fort Rich and Elmendorf through here. In the same respect, their folks are here and they are Alaskans.
So he's stationed in a different,
right.
Maybe Fort Knox or something,
right.
But he's Alaskan,
right.
And he is assigned to the Gulf Complex.
Right.
Boy, that adds to the complexity.
I don't know. I've got a good friend from Nome. He's a West Point graduate, colonel, and he hasn't been in Nome except for vacations occasionally and keeping his permanent fund status current. He hasn't been here for 20 years. You know, I grew up with him, and yet he is an Alaskan, and he served in the golf thing, and I know he calls Nome his home, but I think that's part of the problem here that we find in researching who's who and who's from where. You know, I think it's probably kind of a can of worms, and I certainly would defer that also to Jeff. The mechanics of this bill and the finer details like this, I just wanted to get the people, you know, the thing rolling as far as getting them, but for the people that were elderly.
Representative Foster, I like the bill. I co-signed the bill.
I know, I realize that. I appreciate it.
I'm very, very much in favor of this bill, but
yeah. Boy,
I didn't expect to see a $60,000 fiscal loan on it either. I'll defer that question to Mr. Morrison.
But if there aren't any further questions, Representative Bloomberg.
Yeah, I have a question. The sponsor, and also I'll ask the department. I'm going to hand out here a similar bill that was passed a couple of years ago. We talked about in the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, and those of you who served before know that we remember this bill. It was the Davis bill on the minting of an Alaska medal. And there are several things. When we talked in Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, we talked about a couple of things that we wanted to do with the bill and decided that it'd be best to do it here. And one of the things that we did was to change the word, medal to medallion, so it's not a medal that you put on your uniform, because we can't do that legally. You can't have a state medal that goes on a federal uniform. And that's, by the way, Mr. Chairman, the only change that's in the proposed CS, and just to get that out of the way, I would move the adoption of the CS at this point.
No objections, the CS is adopted.
That's, as I understand from Mayor, the only change in the
Mr. Chairman. Can they wear a medallion?
No, medallion they keep. They wouldn't wear it. They can't wear it. It's like a, you know.
Okay.
And then what I've just handed out is something that we also talked about, but I'd like the members to look at, and these are some detailed things, but I think they're kind of important. Number one, there are two concepts in the Davis bill. And number one is that it has some details about how the things are to be made. And I don't know, then there are details that aren't aren't in the bill that's before us. Whether the department would need statutory authority to contract or otherwise arrange for this. And I'm going to ask Mr. Morrison if they need that authority. If so, we should put that in the bill as in the Davis bill. Secondly, it says that it, and I'm looking at lines 15 and 16 of the Davis bill, gold and silver, and I know this is going to be silver, we're not talking about gold in this case, shall be mined in Alaska, shall be used in the production. I don't know that that's an exclusive requirement, but I know that is the law now with respect to these metals, which are sold all over the state. And I would like to see us do that, assuming that we can do that. And third, it has the mechanism for determining the design of this. And that is right there in the bill itself. And it doesn't say anything here, and the committee can decide whether they want to have some provisions. For example, the Davis bill says one side shall contain the state seal, and the other side is determined in an annual contest, and in that case by the contractor, and the designs must be using an Alaskan theme and submitted by an Alaskan resident. And I think those are policy questions that we may want to consider too. I had an amendment prepared that I'm not going to offer because it didn't take into consideration all of these issues, and I think that the best guidance I can provide on that for both Representative Foster and John Walsh and Mr. Morrison is simply to offer the model of how the Davis bill was drafted, and the members can consider how they want to handle each of those or whether they want to do it at all.
Representative Gruber, excuse me for a moment, I'd like to note that Representative Covina has joined us at 8:50. At this time, I'd like to return the gavel to the chairman.
Duly noted.
Welcome. And I guess my first question would be to either Mr. Walsh or Representative Foster. Looking at the various things in the Davis Act, how do you feel? Do you want to include that stuff in there? Do you want to hear from the department first, or what do you want to do?
Why don't we hear from? I appreciate your remarks, there, Representative Gruenberg. I think they're real logical and appropriate at this time. I'd like to defer those to the department. As far as the fine-tuning of this bill, I think there might be some other little sections that should be addressed also.
Other questions from the committee?
I'd like to add that these changes here make the bill even better, so I'm certainly, as a sponsor, real proud that
Rex, to show that Representative Bruckman is here with us. Is that 30 seconds after Representative Covina?
Oh,
before Representative Covina.
You were the last man.
Actually, it was here. She was here all the time.
Right, I was hoping it wouldn't come up.
I'm a little behind the eight ball here where we're at, so are we done with you?
Why don't you just
slide a little. Let's bring Jeff Morrison up. Mr. Morrison, your name and for the record, sir.
Jeff Morrison, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Military Veterans Affairs, and also Legislative Liaison. I brought a few things that we had around the house.
The record should reflect this person is an all-world champion in shuffleboard.
Shuffleboard?
Yes.
Well, we didn't have much competition.
Beat me three times. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'll address the questions that have been raised so far. If I forget any, please feel free to. On the issue of cost for advertising, I have to confess that's kind of a guess. The guess is is based on the fact that we do foresee a need to advertise the availability of this. If Senate Bill 152 does not pass, then I expect that we will probably need about this amount. The reason being that there are a lot of people who are Alaskan residents who do not live in Alaska and serve in the military, as Representative Foster pointed out. My statistical estimate of the number of Alaskan residents involved in the Persian Gulf is approximately 1,200, and not very many of them were deployed from Alaska. There was a unit from Fairbanks that was deployed from Alaska, but most of them were deployed from wherever the units were stationed throughout the United States and Germany and the rest of the world, pretty much. So there would be a need to make all of these people aware of this benefit, assuming that you really did want them to, you know, everyone who is eligible to receive it, and that's essentially the reason for the cost. It would be, you know, how we would go about this, I don't have an exact plan. We'd need to probably work with our Director of Veterans Affairs and our Public Affairs Officer in the Department of Anchorage, but there are a lot of military publications. We would certainly seek to get as much free advertising as possible, and there may be other states doing similar things to this that we might be even able to get the Department of Defense to kind of make a catalog of if you're a resident of Arizona, right here in Alaska, so on. But you know, that's just a what if maybe situation right now. If Senate Bill 152 passes, there's a fiscal note associated with that, also for advertising, also in approximately this same amount. The eligibility for Senate Bill 152 is based on if you're receiving the Alaska Permanent Fund, or if you receive the 1990 Alaska Permanent Fund, then with the Department of Revenue administering that bill, they would just basically send out a postcard or something like that to everyone who indicated that they were a member of the military on their permanent fund dividend application, and say, if you also served in Desert Storm, let us know, and we'll forward the application for this. So that's my comment on that.
Mr. Chairman, Jeff, the reason for my question was simply that I do find it hard to believe that the military doesn't have this information, and that this information should not be readily accessible to this committee or the sponsor of this bill for determining that these 1,200, 1,500 Alaskans did, in fact, serve in Desert Storm. What type of efforts have you undertaken to find out from the operators of Desert Storm? They have a whole down list of where they signed up. There could be a number of areas that I think the military should be more responsive, or responsive to finding this information, other than a $20,000 fiscal note for advertising. I'm also concerned that the advertising may produce people that did not, in fact, serve on the Desert Storm and stated they were, and what type of means would you have checking that they did?
We have contacted the Department of Defense. I haven't done this myself personally, but our public affairs officers have, and our deputy commissioner has. I have personally called Senator Stevens' office here locally asking for this information, and it is not available. They cannot tell us, you know, they first of all, the magnitude of knowing everybody in the Desert Storm. I really don't know. I mean, they will have that all sorted out. They probably do it at this time, but they just don't have the information cataloged by home of record. And, you know, it's something that has been frustrating to us. It's been frustrating to the sponsors of SB-152, because all I can do at this point is just make a statistical guess based on the population of Alaska and the population of the nation and the number of people who are in Desert Storm, and that's included in the fiscal note. So, you know, I don't feel like apologizing because we tried to get the information. It's just not available now, and I don't know if it ever will be in a way that we can state with assurance that these people did serve.
Mr. Marshall, let me say that probably a month ago or so, we tried through the committee here also and through the military to get names and addresses of people that are in it, that were over there. And we're told the same thing, that they just don't have that. But I don't think they've got a computer system that's got everybody in there, and they can say residency, and they'll pop it out, so.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, sir, I think they have it. I think that if they don't have it now, they will have it shortly. I can't believe we're the only state that's trying to do this with their residents that did serve in the Gulf. And I'd like to know from the sponsor if this bill could be put together in such a way that we go ahead and make the medallions, Richard, and hope that something comes from the military. They've got to have this information, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that they've got to have this information. Everybody signs up in the Army or in the Navy, and they have a place of residence. They have a place of birth. They've got to have this information. And in a time when we're trying to reduce our budget, it seems real hard to justify $20,000 to undertake a campaign that should be readily available from the military. And I'm wondering if possibly this bill could proceed to make the medallions apart from us having to do some work that should be done in my mind.
Mr. Morrison, one of the difficulties that we've encountered in getting the information on individuals is because of the Federal Privacy Act, the Department of Defense will not release some information for individuals, and this, I believe, is that type of information. I'm just making that as an observation. I honestly do not believe that we would get the information that's needed to administer this bill from the Department of Defense. I think we would need to solicit the report.
Well, I think it's probably an argument that we can't really solve here. Obviously, the concern is that we try so that those costs aren't there. And
I asked Jeff if he had checked with military intelligence.
And he said,
that's an oxymoron.
So it's hard to find any here.
There was another question that Representative Choquette asked, and that was concerning confirming eligibility. When we identify the people who say they are eligible, we can require them to demonstrate their eligibility by providing us with their military records, which if we get it from them personally, that's not an invasion of the Privacy Act, and everyone's military record would indicate when they served and where. So that would be one of the ways that we would confirm that they were eligible. And again, if Senate Bill 152 passes with bonuses, that would be something, you know, the Department of Revenue would basically use the same procedure that we would. They may adopt regulations in some way, but if that were to pass, we wouldn't advertise at all. We would just piggyback onto their eligibility business.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, I think there might be a simplistic way to handle this. First of all, $20,000 for an advertising campaign to try to reach people that are literally scattered around the world is not even going to make a ripple in the pond. I think, which has kind of been brought out here, if you will recall that 3 years ago during the Olympics campaign, we did have a check on the tournament fund dividend. Everybody receives a mailing. You could put the, did you participate in Desert Storm, your unit number. It would give you instantaneously a list through that mailing piece. Wouldn't cost, it already is distributed, and we could handle it in the very same fashion. The difference in the Olympic was yes or no, do you want to give your $10? But this could, it could be just part of the application process. It'd be very simple, it's already in place. and you could take that data, turn it over to the congressional delegation, and they could verify it with the Department of Defense. Saves some money, reaches the entire base of Alaskans, and I think we accomplished the sponsor's objective.
Well, another thing I know we can do, we will be able to get the name of each and every unit that was there.
Right.
And we could write each and every unit individually.
So you'd have your, Mr. Chairman, you'd have your database through a vehicle you already have. It's already been used in the past, and I think you'd be much more effective, because I don't think $20,000 worldwide is going to accomplish. I mean, it'll reach some people, but it's not, they're just, you know, you're
not going to do it.
It's not going to do it, and somebody's going to be missed. And this way, we could blanket the entire population, turn over the list to the congressional folks, and let the DOD do the verification. My suggestion. Thanks.
Mr. Martian?
That would require legislation to allow that on the public.
You could do that.
You
could do it.
Yeah. I'm not sure policy-wise if that would be acceptable, because the practical effect of that would be that we wouldn't really have the list until probably a year from August. Applications are out now.
They came yesterday.
The next applications would be sent out in a year from now.
Well, I guess I would argue, though, is it better to reach all the people and do it right, or to just reach part of the people?
You know, no matter how we do it, we're going to leave a bunch of people out. I'd like to see a bunch of medallions held in reserve, like a couple hundred of them, that we make as a reserve, so that when people call up and say, hey, you guys missed me. You know, there's 40 representative districts. I know everybody in my district that was in this operation in the Persian Gulf. I'm sure that some of the other areas, the ones that are easy, like Ivan McLean out of Point Barrel, Ivan, Lyman Hoffman, it's easy to come up with a list, because each one of our districts is so small that, almost everybody puts out newsletters and stuff. You know, and if a guy would just put that in his next newsletter, people are real proud to say, yes, my son so-and-so, currently stationed at some place, was a member of this operation. So I, you know, rather than wait a year here and do it right, like you say, I think by then the timing will be way off, and half the people in some of the rural areas of Alaska won't even remember what this operation was about, you know, next year. So I'd just assume just get the wheels rolling. You know, I understand the fiscal part of it, and certainly the concern over the money's being spent, but if somebody has a better idea, certainly I'm all for it.
Again, I'd still think, I know we can get the names of all the units, and you can write each unit commander, mm-hmm. even the small units, mm-hmm. you know, and then you're probably down to, there's probably 1,000 units over there when you figure a little group that was there, but you're certainly narrowed that down to writing to a lot smaller, you know, zeroing in on some group. I wouldn't want to hold this bill up in any way, shape, or form, and I understand what we're getting at. We're getting that $20,000 and trying to get the cause of it.
You know, actually, there's a lot of other problems here, too. Like, let's say a ship is stationed off Africa and it was a part of the operation, and yet it wasn't in the theater of operations. You know, who's to say who's really eligible? Like in the Vietnam conflict, as we know, there were people stationed in Guam and Midway in Thailand that were part of this operation. Ships stationed off of Hawaii a lot of people said they were Vietnam veterans, and yet where does the guy draw the line to say really he is or not? Because a lot of people went through Vietnam to fix an air conditioner in some air base, and they're on TDY for a week. You know, I mean, I don't know. This war was so short that almost anybody would qualify, you know?
I assume there's a Persian Gulf Service Medal similar to the Vietnam Service Medal that would be issued to...
Mr. Chairman, I have not heard of that, but I fully expect that it will be.
Yeah. Rep. Sam Grubberg.
Yeah, I have a number of questions about this. That happens to be one of them. If you'd look at the language on page 1, line 8 mainly, assigned to an active duty station in the Persian Gulf and nearby areas. We've got people who are flying B-52s out of England, and I don't think that England would be considered a nearby area unless you maybe lived in Alaska or some place far away. So I don't. I think that what you need to say there is, and who are eligible for the service medal for the Persian Gulf conflict or something like that. At the appropriate time, I'll offer an amendment to do that. But that's the way they usually do it. That way, the military makes the determination as to whether the person was in the conflict. And as long as that person can show that they got that service medal, then they are eligible as far as having been in the conflict. I have some other comments too, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
With respect to the fiscal note, I'm sort of going to skip back and forth around a little bit here. With respect to the fiscal note, the issue of revenues, and you'll see here they have a 12.5 figure on the fiscal note for revenues. The department also, in the Military and Veterans Affairs, and Representative Foster can correct me if I'm wrong on this, the department also suggested that revenue raising measure in the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. As I recall, the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee declined to accept that, feeling that we shouldn't be selling these as revenue raisers. They should be simply to honor the people, and we shouldn't be making money off of this effort. So we specifically rejected that. On the other hand, if the department is going to have the authority to mint and sell extra medals, then I think we would have to give them statutory authority to do that, because the way the bill is drafted, the only authority to do anything with this property, which is state property, and it would be unconstitutional to allow it to be sold or otherwise disposed of unless in accordance with law. I think that the bill would have to be amended to allow the sale of these. The way it's written now, the only disposition that can be made of this state property is to award it to the servicemen. And then the Davis bill basically assumes that it's going to be sold. It doesn't specifically say it can be sold, but I know that that's the intent. So I would think that in this there'd have to be some change in the wording of the bill if we're going to allow it to be sold. Also, Mr. Chairman.
Do you want to comment on that?
Oh.
Mr. Morrison, do you want to comment on
that? Sure. I just wanted to confirm what Representative Greenberg has said, and it's my recollection from the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee that they gave very clear direction that we would not be selling this. And I indicated that I would redo the fiscal note based on other changes. I have not redone the fiscal note because I thought that there may have been other changes in a CS, and I wanted to wait for a CS to come out before.
Oh, so this is the same fiscal. I'm sorry. If you look at the Davis bill, Mr. Chairman, on line 13, it specifically says, and sale. So that specifically authorized the sale of that. We'd have to have something like that. Anyway, with respect to the advertising, the military can advertise, I tend to associate myself with what Representative Choquette said. I think that somewhere. And frankly, with respect to releasing the information, I don't know that it would be necessary for the military to release the information to us. And what I would suggest we could do maybe is ask the military to notify the Alaskan, the people who are on active duty who have Alaska as their home of record or some other criteria, notify them. That way, their privacy is not disturbed, but they get the word, and then it's up to them to contact us. And I would think that our congressional delegation could help put out the word so that the military would do the notification, and it wouldn't violate the Privacy Act. I think that might be another way of handling that. With respect to I hope you don't mind drawing on this.
You may have it.
Okay. With respect to subsection C of the bill, shall make the award within 90 days after the person leaves the duty station. I think that's too soon, because a lot of people have left the duty station already, and I don't think we need to have section 3 because C, because you're going to do that as quickly as possible anyway. And section D, using voting list, etc., that's administrative. You would just use what, I don't think we need to put that in the law. You would just determine who they are, but using whatever means you could. And the same with sub E, consulting with appropriate veterans organizations. I think that's the kind of thing that you would be doing anyway. With respect to the Davis thing, I see three things that you may want to take a look at with respect to that, Mr. Chairman. The first issue is whether you, if, and this, these are kind of mechanical, Mr. Morrison, do you have the Davis Act there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the first thing in Section 1, it gave, in that case, the Department of Administration specific authority to contract or otherwise arrange for the minting of these. And I think that statutorily, you probably need to have that authority, unless you're going to have your own people doing the minting of this yourself. I think you need to have statutory authority so that you can enter into contracts. And I frankly don't know whether you need to have an exemption from the procurement code. But that's...
Mr. Morrison?
Mr. Chairman, it would be my expectation that, that this would be bid out just like anything else.
Under the procurement code?
Under the procurement code. And well, that Department of Administration would be actually awarding a contract on behalf of us as they do for anything else that exceeds our procurement authority.
There are going to be two contracts here. The first is the contract for the manufacture of the metals, the casting, dealing with a metal caster or a bronze, a silver caster. And second is with respect to the design of these. And I don't frankly know whether you need any, you also need authority, and I think that this might cover it, to have the contest or whatever you're going to do, and whether you need an exemption from the procurement code for that, because you're dealing with an artistic contract, and you don't want to just go on and it's an artistic service. And I, these are just issues I'm raising. But the question for this is for you is whether you need, how it needs to be worded, and the question for this committee and for you is whether we need to put, or what the committee desires to put in the bill, something like in the Davis Act, that there'll be a contest or whatever, and if so, do they want to have one side of it as the state seal or specifically designated? You know, this kind, what kind of language we want and whether you want to have it in the bill. Otherwise, it's totally at the discretion of the department. And the third is the issue that's on lines 18, I'm sorry, 15 through 17, whether you want to say silver, it should be 99% fine, and you want to say in weights determined by you. But I see that on your fiscal note, you're talking about 2 ounces, whether you want to specify that, and whether you want to say it shall be silver mined in Alaska, shall be used in the production, and if it may not be possible to separate out that silver, whether you want to say in part used or maybe commingled or something like that, but whether we want to have it of Alaskan minerals, at least in part, that's another issue. And I'm sorry, I'm sort of digressed, but I wanted to lay out what I saw some of the issues.
All right, Representative, it's obvious that the co-sponsor and the sponsor discussed this bill in depth before it came to the committee. Representative Moyer.
If it's going to be silver mined in Alaska, should we have the little bear on the back then, too?
The mining the silver?
Yeah, with a pick and a shovel. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Shulkat.
Also, Mr. Morrison, only designs used by Alaskan theme, using Alaskan theme and submitted by an Alaskan resident may be considered in this contest. We like that.
Wishes of the committee. Obviously, if it appears we're going to have to be some rewrite here on this bill. I would like to move this bill out of committee as quickly as possible. May I recommend that Representative Foster and Representative Groomberg and and Mr. Morrison get together between now and have us, and Representative Choquette, and have us a, and I'd sit in on that also.
I think it can be done real shortly.
And have a,
rapidly.
Have a CS for us by tomorrow evening so we can have it back to us on Friday morning here to move out.
Representative Choquette, share that.
Representative Choquette, would you like to take the lead on this? Being the
we'll be there when
supporter of military and veterans affairs that you are.
That's one Max.
We'll have a medallion with a made Alaska pair on it.
But I would like to have that by tomorrow afternoon. That way we can get this moving.
I appreciate your support.
Appreciate
you doing it, Mr. Foster.
I just wanted to, just people see how this other cover seems pretty similar.
Yeah, it does.
All right, with that, House Bill 188 is in subcommittee.
Oh, yeah, Jeff.
Jeff just went yesterday to... Next item for the committee is HGR 29 by Representative Moyer. Resolution relating to the Persian Gulf conflict. HGR 29 commends U.S. troops to serve in the Persian Gulf and requests the Legislative Council to send a message of congratulations to all Alaskans returning from the Persian Gulf service. Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The members may remember we passed, I believe it was HGR 8 by Representative Barnes earlier in the session, in which we wished well to the Alaskans serving in the Gulf. This resolution can be looked at as a follow-up that thanks and congratulates those Alaskans who serve in the Gulf now, conflict now that it is over. And I note the long list of distinguished co-sponsors, including I think everybody on this committee.
We all like the way you put that.
There is a CS that was adopted by Military and Veterans Affairs, which made several small changes to the original draft to accommodate some concerns and to expand the list of whom it was sent to, or would be sent to. Simply on line 17, page 1, we clarified that we're really under a ceasefire now. The end has not actually come until we sign a truce.
Which may be today.
Oh, really?
UNS meeting either late last night or this morning to vote on a formal ceasefire.
And on line 1, page 2, we used the place the word available with the word appropriate at the end of the first sentence on line 1, page 2. And lastly, under the copies, expanded to whom it was sent to include our local commanders of the Army and the Air Force, Edison McGarney. Someone help me out with
it. McInerney.
It's like that Tabasco sauce.
Edison works for McInerney.
And our own Commissioner Cox. It does have a zero fiscal note from the previous committee. I would note that it does, after hearing a discussion on the previous day, deciding exactly to whom it should be sent and how we get there is a little bit of a challenge. Representative Barnes's was a little easier in that everyone was still serving, and she had arranged through a person in Alaska who was coordinating with the national effort to get radio messages to the Gulf, and it was, as I recall, simply read probably repeatedly over the national broadcast within the Persian Gulf, whereas now we're trying to welcome back those Alaskans who serve in our home. Given some further thought to it, I think we'd want to include those who will still arrive at some point, perhaps aren't back yet as they're phasing down. And a good point was raised, whether we're talking about all the Alaskans who serve from, I shouldn't say Alaskans, people, soldiers who serve from Alaskan bases, regardless of where their hometown is, or are we talking about Alaskans who served because this is their home state, but they may be situated in some other facility. So now I'm just throwing up problems of my own.
I think you're right.
Mr. Morrison?
Mr. Chairman, obviously we support the bill. I think it's, the difficulty in getting the information to everyone, I think is well noted and recognized by everyone. Frankly, I don't know how the Legislative Council would go about doing this or how they went about doing HGR 8 and the notification there. I guess you mentioned that.
Yes, they actually, Mr. Chairman, it was worked, as I said, through, I believe, someone on the Kenai who was involved in the national effort. And I don't believe the council actually had involvement in that case.
There still are
basically relate to the further resolved on page 2, line 4. One thing is, do, you know, we could have them send a message, or we could have them send the, just the resolution itself. That's one thing. Secondly, can we, why do we have to go through the Legislative Council? Can't we just request the legislature, can't we just request the LAA to do this?
I can't answer that directly, other than to say it's a pattern after Representative Barnes's.
Oh, I see, okay.
That's how they did it. But as far as your suggestion's concerned, I've considered that perhaps we could change the further resolve to say that the legislature thanks those deserving of Gulf Harbor for your efforts and deserve to leave with that rather than...
And then direct them to send the resolution.
Well,
I thought whatever we do right now.
Yes. It does have a further term.
I'm sure that was Representative Gruberg's thought back in...
Oh, yeah.
Back in Veterans and Military Affairs.
I thought you do not pass on this one.
No, you did.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Miller.
I think Representative Moyer did bring up a good point, and that we should probably, if we are going to pass it out today, we should do clarify it personally on the one point on who do we want it to go to. I think there are two groups out there. I think it actually should go to both groups, those that came from Alaska bases, those that may not call Alaska home, but I mean, they're here. They're, you know, and those Alaskans that came from other bases but are Alaskans. And I think the committee should clarify that we want it to go to both groups. And on page 1, just if we want to be, you know, technically correct, we are not under a ceasefire. I think the United States Military Command will tell you we're not under a ceasefire, we're under a stop of military offensive. Because, I mean, Schwarzkopf has made it very clear that at any point in time, until there is a formal clear ceasefire, military operations can start again, and there is not a ceasefire.
I think there'll be a ceasefire before the day is over.
Well, that very well may, but in case there isn't, if you want to be correct. It's a minor point, but...
No, I appreciate that. In fact, I had asked legal to come up with the proper term, and for whatever reasons, I think we sent over a couple of suggestions of truce or cessation or something, but they struck a ceasefire.
Probably by the time this goes out, we'll be under a ceasefire.
Oh, yeah.
We once again proved the attorneys don't really know what they're talking about.
Would you agree this is still a zero fiscal note? I mean, when you consider you have to do mailings and a little looking around, but the cost is so minimal that this is still considered a zero fiscal note?
Well, certainly as to our department, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how the legislature affairs agency.
Nobody submitted a fiscal note except for the past Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs. I assume, and since it is directing Lynch Council, how do we handle that, Representative?
There's a fiscal note from the LIA.
It has a finance referral, but if it is only a zero fiscal note, this could be the end of the hearings on this bill. Could ask Representative Barr to wave it on and get it to the floor.
If we can justify it as zero note.
I wonder if we need to ask LAA for a fiscal note on it.
That's what they do. They're going to be doing the mailing.
Now,
they may be willing to do it for a zero fiscal note. Or either that or just for a little bit. I guess we'll decide how they want to handle it.
Representative Meyer.
Question for Jeff, and you may not be able to answer part of it. That is when, for example, we send a copy of the resolution to the Commissioner of Military Veterans Affairs. What does he do with it? And what happens to it when you send it to Washington, D.C., to the Secretary of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff, et cetera? I mean, that's what I didn't want you to say.
Smiled.
Which is one of the reasons I wanted to include the local commanders, who we could easily encourage them. I think they would be more than happy to put it in their paper or on the... If I may, Tom, what's the name of the radio network?
Alaska Forces Radio Network.
It broadcasts out of Fort Richardson to all the, you know, each post or base has its own guess the point is there are lots of ways to get the word out, including, I agree, you know, each individual legislator has soldiers in their district or a post or a base that might get publicized.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Grunberg.
Did we make the motion?
Yeah, they may have. I'm going to offer some amendments here. On page 2, line 5, after the word Alaskans, in line with what Representative Miller said, and say, and persons stationed here. So to all returning Alaskans, meaning Alaskan residents, regardless of where they're stationed, and to all persons stationed here.
Why don't you just make the whole thing as one motion?
Okay. That's the first part of this. Secondly,
all right, well, thanks for this.
Because of the issue of the B-52s and stuff, on line 6, U.S. military forces in the Persian Gulf conflict. That way they don't have to actually have been in the Persian Gulf as long as they were in the conflict. And third, striking the phrase before March 1, 1991, because there may be people who are over there who go over after March 1, 1991. That's the third part. And the fourth part, and I'll ask Mr. Morrison this, I think as a matter of protocol, lieutenant general is 3 stars, major generals are 2 stars. And I think we got to put the lieutenant general before major general Ellison. So I think
the protocol is correct. I'm not sure how the protocol
So I would ask that the CS then put the lieutenant general prior to the major generals. They're both Cox and Ellison.
16 and 17.
16 and 17. And he's the commander of the Alaskan Command. It's not Alaskan Command U.S. Air Force. It's a multi command. So scratch, delete U.S. Air Force. So just so that people know, again, it's a sort of an all-purpose omnibus amendment.
Let me just ask
you. Okay.
I will certainly accept those amendments. And note that I guess the drafter is not well-versed in military affairs.
Is there any objections to the amendments? Representative Baker.
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunberg, Adjutant General Cox is a 2-star, isn't he? So Major General, but he's active, so therefore he would, by military rank, the active 2-star would, Major General would come in front of the Adjutant, I guess.
Well, actually, Mr. Chairman, I think what they were doing was putting the U.S. ones first, and then the state isn't customary to have it.
Well, in military hierarchy, though, it goes according to rank, no matter. But I think the Adjutant is actually, he is active, though.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Morrison.
His rank is Major General, his position is absolute
right.
General.
So we have 1 3-star and 2 2-stars. And the 3-star should go before the 2-star.
That's correct.
And I don't know, does it make a difference which order the 2-stars go? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
It does?
Yes, it does. I mean, but I'm not certain.
This is correct.
I think this
is
correct.
So Ebbison would go before Cox?
Is that all so important? Is this
I think you have to be pretty careful when you're dealing with rank.
I would agree with the rank.
I thought he was retired.
But now he's reactive.
Oh, he reactivated.
Well, plus he's a state official.
Right.
So are we set with the amendments that you made?
Yeah, just disregard the little question mark, Mr. Chairman. So again, it's after Alaskans on line 5, adding the phrase and person stationed here. It's adding on line 6 after the Gulf with conflict, striking the phrase before March 1, 1991. And on line 17, putting the lieutenant general in front of Major General Ellison, and striking on line 17, U.S. Air.
Anybody want a copy of that? Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest the correct title for General Cox would be Major General Hugh Cox, Adjutant General, like Commander Alaskan's Command, Department of Military.
Major General Hugh Cox, and then put Adjutant General after his name.
Adjutant General, comma, Department of.
Yes,
go for it.
I would ask that be considered as a second amendment.
Well, this is included, is that all right?
Friendly amendment to a friendly amendment.
Any others? All right, if hearing no objections, those amendments are
adopted.
I'm going to ask this little showcat subcommittee.
Okay, what, any other amendments to this bill? Representative Moyer.
I think we have two choices here at this point, so either send it on, if we leave in the Alaska Legislative Council, just make a mail out, and we need the decimal note for that, I suppose, pass it out pending.
What my intention would be to call over LA when our meeting is over, if I can get a zero fiscal note out on, then I'll, we'll read the bill out, and I'll ask Navar to waive it. If we can't, then it'll go to finance.
Okay, that suits me, and the other option that we could take up in finance if it has to go there is simply not asking the council to send it out, and relying on other means to get the message through the various distributions that we've talked about in our own means.
I think that's a good way to do it. It's just really a LA, or the Ledge Council tells LA what to do, LA wants to see it, do it. Yes?
Mr. Chairman, I tried to opening up a can of worms here, but I'm going to have to do it. On page 2, line 1 through 3, here the whole resolution is talking about basically our military people serving in. And the problem I see with subparagraph 3 is we have thrown this in, and as has been a discussion earlier on, and for some of us, myself included, it becomes the linkage question with the state of Israel. And being that the fact that this whole resolution talks about our military personnel, and then all of a sudden in the middle we throw that in, I have a problem.
Well, how about if we change it to causes an instability in the Middle East, causes an instability in the entire world, and then we won't offend anybody and we won't threaten.
Well, but here, you know, we can have a resolution of where we're talking, you know, basically to our military people, and then throw this in the middle of it. I just have a real problem with that.
Comments, Representative Moyer?
Well, to that, when we spoke previously, I think Max, too, we didn't get to that level of detail, that sort of context. That was a combination of attempt to be made by changing all available means to all appropriate so that it didn't automatically apply their deal language. You certainly argued either way, I think when the military personnel coming home read it, I think they would be happy to note that you're trying to urge the presidency of peace. Certainly isn't vastly out of context, but at the same time, plus dyspepsia to a fellow committee member, I certainly consider some solution. Is there any way it might be reworded, or are you proposing just to strike it?
I'm proposing just to strike it.
Mr. Morrison, comments on that subject?
Okay. Well, as I said, it's a can of worms, and it's...
Do I hear a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
There is a motion to strike lines, delete lines 1 through 3 on page 2. There is objection. Representative Bruckman.
I think it's certainly appropriate that we would prefer not to have any future conflicts, that we're all looking for peace, whether it be just in the Middle East or the entire world. And I would withdraw my co-sponsorship if that would be needed. Okay.
I don't think, I don't think it's quite that strong, but I think the objection was whether that statement is appropriate in a resolution that specifically praises our troops for what has happened. And I don't think that Representative Miller is saying that he doesn't want peace in the area or anything else. He's just questioning whether the statement is appropriate in this particular resolution.
I would note, if I may, Representative Miller has an Air Force base in his district. I know he is also a co-sponsor, would like to support this. I wouldn't want to see either of you withdraw your support, which I hope is not inevitable if you're taking such diametric positions.
Any other discussion on the amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just in the amendment, and you know, I certainly, we all certainly want peace in the Middle East, but at the same time, I think this is a question that came up during the entire conflict, and I'm just a little bit uneasy with it, because I think it can be read as a linkage question with the Palestinian problem. And that is a very political question right now. It's going to be a political question for years. Do we want a political question in this that is basically for our troops? And I don't know necessarily that's an issue for the Alaska legislature to decide.
Any other questions, statements, or questions on the amendment? Calling for a vote. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your right hand.
I should have spoke before we took the vote.
Well, then I'll back off for a second.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Representative Moyer. I was trying to make some peace here, actually.
Representative Moyer. Representative Moyer.
I don't want to say I want to say a friendly amendment, because I put it in the first place, but I can see that you certainly could read it out of context. So I don't want to consider a friendly amendment. I think we should vote on it, but I don't have a problem with it.
You don't. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Breckman.
It's my feeling that this is simply a message that we're not sending our troops into war at the drop of a hat, you know, that we value human lives and we value the military, and that peace comes, you know, we always seek peace. It seems like a very simple statement that diplomatic. It says diplomatic means. It doesn't speak to individual set actions in the Middle East. I wouldn't withdraw my co-sponsorship. I retract that statement, but I feel ill at ease and a personal conflict that we aren't making a statement.
Representative Greenberg.
I was kind of torn, because obviously I don't want to see this thing in play in the situation or be sent as a message. On the other hand, I too support the peace. The problem with Section 3, and I appreciate the sponsor's willingness to believe it, is it's very difficult phrase, clause, to word without causing problems. It's a real difficult thing to draft. And it's a drafting thing more than anything else. So you can draft it so it means the same thing to everybody. The rest of the resolution is clear, but this is subject to various interpretations. And to get the message, to be sure that everybody gets the same message, it's probably the safest course to take the course of least resistance and not to have anything in that's going to cause ambiguity. So I am pleased to see, and I will vote for the amendment.
Is there still objection to the amendment? There is objection. We're taking a vote of the committee on the amendment to delete Section 3, lines 1 through 3 on page 2. Representative Baker.
Delete.
Yay. Representative Miller.
Delete.
Representative Greenberg.
Yes.
Representative Breckman.
Yes.
Representative Choquette. Representative Moyer.
Yes.
Representative Kavina. Yes. The amendment is adopted. Any further amendments to the resolution? I would like a motion.
I'll move.
Representative Greenberg.
I'll move to adopt the CS containing the amendments.
There is a motion to move to adopt the A committee substitute or the bill as amended. Are there objections? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute is adopted. Now I'll take the motion. Let me explain my intent, would be to ask LAA for a fiscal note, hopefully a 0-1. If so, we'll try to move it. Get finance to waive it. If not, it will go to finance. Attention. Representative Choquette.
Did you want a motion to move this out of committee?
I would like the motion.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
There is a motion to move with an individual recommendation. Are there objections? Hearing none. HJR 29 has moved to committee.
Thank you all.
45 minutes.
What's wrong with peace?
Resolution.
We value human lives and peaceful settlements.
I would like to say that.
I'm not thinking of Palestinians, or, you know, it's just.
I would like to say that HJR 17, we did have a meeting on it yesterday. We are working up slight changes in the bill that we'll bring before you on Friday, and then we will And we're also, I think, even more importantly, drafting a letter that I hope is going to be an appropriate letter on that. I'd like to take up at this time HB 171. What's the pleasure of the committee? We have people that have been waiting here to testify about a bill that I believe has great importance and possibly far-reaching effects that I believe needs our undivided consideration. It's not something we can just rush through, as I thought may happen on the previous two bills. But it is 16 minutes to. Would you like to have a an overview by Representative Donnelly? And we won't have time. We do have people signed up to testify. We're not going to have time. But would you like to start it with Representative Donnelly, or would you like to put it off till Friday? Representative Miller?
Mr. Chairman, I don't. This is just my being that, you know, we are in close to session. I think it's one of those bills that I think it is of great importance. And unfortunately, it may be one of those bills that we'll spend maybe too little time on. I would like to this be the first order of business on Friday, and if we spend all day Friday, and if we have to spend all day of the next couple of days working on it, because it's personally, it's a bill that we should not rush through, because I think it is of great importance and, you know, lasting consequences if you do something that, you know, we shouldn't do. So I would like to spend a lot of time on it personally.
You know, the committee should be aware we have a lot of bills in this committee. We have a dozen approximately constitutional amendments. What I'm going to do today, staff, is we're working up a whole calendar for the rest of the session. And some of these things are going to take some time to discuss. We have we have several bills in there that are going to take quite a bit of time. And we've got, well, we've got 3 days a week. We really, an hour doesn't go very far. So on Friday, we have scheduled House Bill 225 relating to retirement credit for unused sick leave, HJR 31 relating to pollution investment and prevention, waste reduction and recycling, HB 167 relating to absentee voting, another important issue there, HB 138 relating to appropriation of clean water fund and waste management loans. Representative Gruber.
I think that to do justice, I've never sat on this committee before. We're going to need to meet more than just 3 days a week, a couple of hours, maybe some evening meetings a week, and to really, these are all important bills, and I don't think it's really possible. Some of these have more than two bills on them. Particularly, we have stuff that's left over, like that voting bill is left over. We're going to have the metals left over. We're going to deal with this thing. I have no problem with coming in the evenings or even earlier in the morning. I'll try to get here, whatever you want.
I was going to suggest if we came in at 8, we'd gain an hour and a half right there.
I have no problem with that.
Eight.
We came 8,
we would gain
half hour. Half hour.
No, I meant over the course of the week.
Oh.
Right. Well, wait a minute,
though. Yes.
Yeah. Friday, surprisingly, is a good day for me. I mean, if you want to do an afternoon also.
We have problems with scheduling other times during the day with other people's committee assignments. And we also have the Exxon Valdez settlement that's taking up a lot of time, too. And
point of order, I mean, we still have the sponsor waiting here. One of
them. Well, we're debating that right now.
Mr. Chairman, following on
Representative Miller.
On Representative Grunberg, I think, of course, as we get down towards the end of session, now we're down to roughly 40-some days left in the end of session. And hopefully fewer people will be leaving on the weekends as we do start to get into crunch time. And I think that we very well may be in a case, I know in another committee that both represent and I grew.
It's unnamed.
An unnamed committee down the hall that the chairman is the prime sponsor of this particular piece of legislation will probably be meeting a lot in the evenings, I would imagine. But we very well may have to be looking at evening meetings and weekend meetings to do some of these things, because I think we are going to be dealing with a lot of legislation, or hopefully that have a lot of meaning and we don't want to rush through. And at the same time, I think it will be incumbent upon the chairman to look at what's in the committee and those things that really are not that important or have no chance of passage this year
I would appreciate if each of you actually go through the list also and see if there's bills that are of importance to you, and let me know that. So, Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to take a wild plunge here, and would suggest if you're willing to do it. This is a committee of first referral, so we, in order for this stuff to get anywhere, we have to do our work earlier than other committees do, to the committees of second referral. And I would suggest that we have an evening meeting this week and just come in, let's say at 7 o'clock and go to 9 o'clock or 8:30 or something like that. Or even stay even earlier, come in and have pizza or something, and just really knock some of this stuff out. And I'd be willing to spend some time here. Because if we don't do it in the next 2 weeks, it's going to be just everything backed up, because these are all House bills, all go to at least one more committee, then go to a couple committees in the Senate.
Well, I would rather do it after Monday so that we put out the, get in, do our committee assignments through. They have to be in today, and that's why we're talking about that today, so we can.
The only problem with doing it, like, on this Saturday, if you wanted to meet on this Saturday, is that's going to be a day of public hearings on this for oil spill.
We'll sit down and when we do our scheduling today and come up with some other times. I would like agreement of the committee, though, that until further notice, we'll meet at 8 o'clock Monday,
very
Wednesday,
good.
Friday,
yeah.
Rather than 8:30.
Yes.
Is there any
agreed.
Objections to that?
And we will.
Representative Donnelly, your bill will be the first bill that we start discussing on Friday.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And that'll be at 8 o'clock, Representative Donnelly.
Okay.
And I apologize to those of you that signed up in the audience that we did not get there.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Grunberg.
You may want to do that metals bill in the voting room, since those are not open.
I also wanted to say that we had a very good committee meeting in Anchorage this week, and then I'll make a little report to the full body on that. I appreciate those of you that were there, and those of you who couldn't, really missed an interesting time with some old folks that I think they have character. You know, that's what maybe age develops, is character. Representative Bruxman.
But I think the record should show that the meeting went so well because the chairman handled it so
thank
well,
you.
And that the character was sitting in the chair's seat.
Yeah, I learned something on that, though.
Please.
Representative Donnelly, every time he saw a TV camera committee, he made it. He walked outside in the hallway, and so he probably got a lot of good press out of being there. Even you learned from these guys who've been around. All of you, all of us newer people. Representative,
Mr. Chairman, we also had some very enlightening meetings. Representative Baker and myself on the Rec Rivers bill resolution. And the report will be forthcoming to you shortly. And I'm also expecting that a few members of this committee will be discussing with you some options that we would like this committee to pursue on that bill.
Yeah.
And I thank you for allowing us to hold the hearings. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Chairman,
I think we had a total between the two, between Wasilla and Anchorage of close to 100 people. Very, very well attended.
I would just say, Representative Shulkett, that resolution came to this committee, but it really is not an area that I consider our purview, if that's the proper word there. And that if you're thinking about action on that bill, my initial thoughts were to move that resolution onto resources and ask them to do that. So if you have other intentions, I suggest you get with me and let me know where it is you want to go.
Mr. Chairman, one thing came to light during the course of the hearing that we would like to pursue. I have no objections to pushing this out of committee and getting it behind
us.
Let's
get together and talk about that.
I'd like Representative Baker and Representative Grunberg to be available to that meeting.
Anything else come before the committee? I appreciate this committee, and I apologize for being with us.
You're the last one to hear about it.
Please adjourn. 9:52. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.